Welcome to The Atypical Leader with Rick Brennan, where we talk about harnessing what makes you unique
and maybe even a little odd,
while at the same time dismantling the notion that you have to be a certain type of person or act a certain way to be an effective leader.
Definitely a leader, not a follower.
I like the sound of this.
It's time for us atypical leaders to come out of the shadows and learn to be proud and confident in what makes us different.
I'm proud of who I am.
I'm proud of who I am.
Atypical Leader starts now.
Good morning, Judy.
Good morning, Mr. Brennan. How are you?
I like the Mr. Brennan bar.
You're doing good with that.
Yeah, yeah, I like that.
Yeah, I thought you...
A sir will do, too.
Oh, sir? Oh, okay. Shall I salute, too?
Well, it would work if we were video, but no one can see it, so it doesn't really
yeah,
matter,
but it would
right?
make you feel better.
Would it?
I think so.
Yeah, so anyways, what's going on?
Not much. Here we are in Hako once again.
Once again. Still. We were out last night, had supper, saw the sunset and all that.
Yeah, had a few cocktails.
Your daughter's in town?
My daughter and her fiancé, which is lovely.
Good.
So it's good.
And you missed out on happy hour the other day out in Estorias.
I did. My phone didn't ring for some reason.
No, we didn't invite you.
No, I know.
It's just the way it goes sometimes.
And yeah. Here I am still.
But when I was out there,
uh-huh.
I was talking, we're sitting there talking to my good buddy Larry.
Okay.
And Larry said, you got to meet this guy. He's been here a number of times, and he's met the Dalai Lama.
Wow.
And I said, what? Dalai Lama?
Yeah,
I mean,
no
like,
kidding.
To me, that's like top of the mountain
yeah,
stuff,
yeah.
you know, like, holy shit.
I mean,
how do you get to meet the Dalai Lama? What do you say to the Dalai Lama? What do you do with all that? I thought I got to talk to there. And Jay was there with his wife, lovely wife. And we started a conversation, which was just fantastic. And I'll let Jay explain to the people that he met. And he's here with us in the studio today. But how you think differently, how you approach life differently from certain points of view, from maybe the way you were brought up in your culture, for what part of the world you live in, all of these things impact the way that you think, kind of like neurodiverse people. Now, ours is more of a sort of a mental alteration of that, and we think about things in a different way.
Right.
But where you grow up, what you're exposed to, the people that you hang around with, we talk about our tribe a lot. Excuse me while I turn my phone off.
Mr. Professional.
Yeah. So what was I saying?
I don't know.
Look at her laughing at me. Oh, my God. So Jay's here with us, and he's like, I think he's a little disappointed that you were laughing at me there, Judy.
I don't think so. I think he was chuckling, too. I mean, it's pretty funny.
Oh, yeah.
So anyway, welcome, Jay. Thank you for being on.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, it's lovely to meet you.
It's always nice to be met and to be, and for people to be nice.
Yes. So like I was saying, I read your bio and you've written a book. And what was the name of the book again?
The Adventures of an Inner City Kid.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
So that, and what's the book all about?
Well, it's about an African-American kid coming out of the inner city, raised by a Baptist great aunt. Went to church, a Baptist church, for twice on Sunday, and then being educated Catholic with the Catholics, with the nuns at that leave.
Or you guys, I was taught by nuns too, or you get smacked by the ruler. Smacked by the yardstick.
Yes, yeah, I had all that. I started Catholic school in 1948. And so, you know, all the things that came along with the Catholics believe, and they gave me structure. My great aunt gave me love, my introduction to love and kindness, and the Catholics gave me education from the point of St. Augustine, St. Thomas More. We studied a lot, and for a kid that had not been exposed to any of this, I think it was fertile ground for what occurred later. And went on to Catholic schools and went to college and became a banker.
Okay. But obviously your upbringing, I'm sure it's all in the book, kind of set the way that you thought about life.
It set the way I thought, but it set a path, and I was in my 20s. So I was blessed from that point of view. And so if you fast forward it, my curiosity began probably at age 50. And I learned to read. I read the philosophers, etc. I was curious. You know, there was something inside of me said there was more, and to look for more, and to expect more. There are many times that inner voice kept me out of a lot of trouble. A lot of my friends are not around today. But nevertheless, as my journey continued, it was only after I reached Phoenix, Arizona, that I was introduced to Unity. And at that point, it was a lot of people that I began to listen to, like Eckhart Tolle.
Eckhart Tolle.
And
I have to tell you, I read The Power of Now.
Power of Now.
I've read it a number. Well, I shouldn't. You don't read that book. You kind of study that book.
I can only go a chapter or two at a time. Then I have to kind of absorb.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And for me, being neurodiverse and, you know, dyslexic, I mean, it's a struggle getting through that. Okay, what do you say? And read that line over. What do you say? Read that line over. But it's an awesome book. And I don't want to interrupt your story, but thing about being in the now.
Being in the now.
That's
and that was
tough.
My first introduction of being in the now. And it was, holy crap. I wasn't even close to being in the now because I was an A-type personality. I was a banker. I was in corporate, you know, so it was competition. It was competitiveness. And if you slowed up, you get run over.
Right on.
So I was an A-type personality. And it wasn't until, you know, my late 60s that reading these kind of, I first got the Eckhart Tolle's book 10 years prior to me really sitting down reading it, pulled it off the shelf after I joined Unity. And that was several years ago.
Can I interrupt just for a moment?
Sure.
What is Unity?
Unity Church. It's non-denominational base. And that is where, you know, there is a spirit in you. It's a God in you, not someone floating around in heaven.
But that's important, I think, because we talked about, like, we talked to people that were aiming this podcast. It's all about, you know, believing in yourself, because it's about neurodiversity. It's about having this and that and dyslexia or cognitive dysfunction or ADHD or what it might be. But at the end of the day, you got to own who you are.
You have. But how do you get there?
Good question. Tell us.
That is the question. It's a long journey. And if you don't make mistakes, it's hard for you to learn. But I was fortunate. Good things happen at a good time. And then as I went into my middle 60s, that is the first time my wife and I heard Dalai Lama at Indiana University, where the Buddhists had a center, and the Dalai Lama's brother was over that center at Indiana University in Bloomington. And we were among about 100 or so people. And at that point, the light went on, because what he was saying and what he was projecting. And most important, he laughed. And after he says something that's kind of profound, he would kind of laugh. He'd get a joy out of laughing.
Right.
And the more he kind of chuckled after he said something, you almost had to kind of rear back and say, let me digest that. Okay, I get it.
But what was his general message?
It is the peace. He talked about your mind, your heart, your intention, and most importantly, your discipline to move forward based on your intent. And it's inside.
Right.
And so coming up Catholic, and whether you're Catholic, Protestant, what have you, everything was outside. Mm-hmm. He was the first person that directed me towards the spirituality inside.
But when you say spirituality, what do you mean? Because I don't get the sense you're not talking religion, you're talking that thing in me, that goodness, that desire.
God is love. So it's not this mysterious person floating around giving points out and saying you. God is love, law. And when you get to love is law for us humans, that is the part where you get the kindness and you feel that spirit in you that is God-centered.
And okay, but can you put that into practical terms, though? Because, I mean, that sounds great. But how do I, if I'm listening to this podcast, how do I take what you're saying via the Dalai Lama and apply that to my life?
You have to find out how to love yourself.
Love yourself first. So believing yourself would be part of that.
Yeah.
Accepting yourself for the good parts of me, the bad parts. I mean, not that I'm not always trying to be good, but we have our shit, right?
We do, and you bring up a interesting point. And one of the things in my book, and I don't know how it happened, I was at a hotel to meet a friend in a lounge, and the place was completely crowded. And there was only one seat available, and the man motioned for me to come over. And so DeRosa, and he had coached the Yankees, the Dodgers. He was back in the Jackie Robinson period.
Wow.
He was married to the actress Lorraine Day, and he was one of the guys, and, you know, good guys finish last. And the guy sitting right next to him was Peter Graves, James Arness' brother. And, you know, I said, I'm going to be cool. I can't get intimidated. So DeRosa ordered a drink for me. And you couldn't get any word because DeRosa had all these stories. He just stories going back to the 30s, 40s, and 50s. But the most important thing that I got from that is this man was motivated mentally. He didn't take any crap. He had a kind heart, but he would push you to do your best. And I think when you go to the Dalai Lama, as well as another person I met who and even talked to even more so, it's Archbishop Desmond Tutu. When they say, do your best, you bring in your love, your kindness, but it got to come inside. And if you don't love yourself, if you're having a whole lot of conflict, which all of us have conflict. That's part of being born. You have conflict. That's 100%. What it's all. Yeah. That's what it's all about. And part of the journey is how do you learn to be kind? How do you learn to be more loving, more nurturing? And it's nothing a college degree can give you or money or anything.
But it flies else. In the face of comments like what's the saying? Good guys don't get ahead. Yeah. And I don't know if I believe.
Coming from the inner city, we had to survive. We had to deal with a whole lot of rough stuff out in the streets and things of that. So you survive. You're not thinking about being kind to anybody. You're trying to be nice, but you're trying to survive. So as you grow up, and that's where the Catholics helped me with that because it got me to thinking. And then it led me to feeling. And I know a lot of people had trouble feeling. What is feelings? You know, it goes back to the law of love. Ultimately, again, I didn't get that until later, much later in my life, that what love is. So my personal thing is I have an open reception of people. Unless someone shows me that they're not interested, they don't love themselves. Okay, I get it. But like when you and I met, hey, we probably knew each other in the other life, but regardless of that, right, it was easy for us to communicate.
It was. It really was. I got to say, we had a great conversation, sure. But I think we're approaching something from two very different angles, but going to the same thing. I'm dealing with people with, you know, like I say, be you dyslexic? Do you have any of those neuroversity issues that tend to hold you back? Tend to lay a lot of doubt in your mind that you can be successful? Because one time the typical thinker saying, no, you need to act like this. And I'm going, well, I can't act like that. How do I do that? Which makes you then kind of feel stupid and then becomes hard to love yourself. You know, you lose that confidence and all of that sort of thing holds you back, right? You're coming from a more spiritual level, but I think they connect.
Metaphysical introduced me to metaphysical. And the definition of metaphysical is, it's beyond the physical, something you can't explain, you can't put in a book, but you know that there is something beyond
right. The
physical, you know. And so once you start getting to that mindset that there's something else, it doesn't have to be a God or anything, but there's something else that is part of the universe that made part of the creation of which you are. And now you have to find and get the definitions for yourself. What is beyond the physical? Our brains, our eyes, our heart. You know, we get lucky. I can go to Las Vegas and win $1,000. I can go to Las Vegas and lose $1,000 and get hit by a car going across Vegas Boulevard. So, you know, it's...
Now, you know what? I kind of compare that to, like, I do some yoga and I try to meditate, but meditating's very hard.
It is.
But I could, the little bit I've done, like I could really see those monks up in the mountain floating in the air. Like it's crazy the power that focus for a longer period of time can really do. You know, now, but one thing I'd ask you is that now you've traveled all over the world.
Yes.
You've talked to many, many people. And people from different cultures or different areas of the world must look at this differently. You talk about North, I even compare North America to Costa Rica. So many rules in North America, so many biases in North America. And you come down here and it's just, it's more pura vida. It's more relaxed. It's less rules. People are just living life, trying to be happy, trying to fit in. And I haven't traveled the world like you, but I'm sure it must enter into all of the discussion that we're having.
Yes. Different tribes, different folks. Capitalism drives North America. It was born long ago in Europe. If you don't put the effort, you're not going to get paid. So you play by the rules. And those are rules you have to adjust to. As you continue on your journey, as I found myself, I started times a day. The vision, played basketball, was an athlete. So competition. So I knew all about that. But in travel, my wife and I have been to Spain on three different occasions. We talked to Spaniards. One thing we always would do when we go abroad, we don't hang with the tourists. We get with the people who live there. And it's great food and everything else. But the people in Barcelona do not think necessarily like the people in Madrid. You know, they have their difficulties. In North, Portugal is very glad they were kind of robots. There was no smiles. We were in downtown St. Petersburg, and people were just going about their business. But I didn't pick up any joy, and that's one of my parameters, joy. I didn't pick that up. I was just glad to get out.
But did you go to the rural area of Russia?
No, didn't want to go to the rural area of Russia. I've seen enough. I'm going to get
really?
Off. I'm going to go. Yeah. It was no joy. And when you take joy away from people, you better watch out. Because they're dealing from a different point of view. And that point of view can be dangerous.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, you call it joy, I would call it enthusiasm.
Yeah.
When you're enthusiastic, man, things in your brain are firing differently.
Oh, yeah.
It's a whole different, you're just a different person. And how do you get to that? How do you get to have that joy, to drive that enthusiasm, which is I believe in myself, I have that confidence in myself. I'm accepting that I'm not perfect. I make all kinds of mistakes, and that's okay.
Listen to that inner voice as you begin to grow. You're acting from your brain. You know, you're building a building. You're building this. You're successful. We're in a place now where people obviously are benefiting from their success. But that's not that inner voice that you have to open that door. I'm going to still be finding out who I am when they throw dirt on me. But, you know, I'm at a much better place now than I ever have been. I'm not conflicted. I worked it out. And in my book, I told why did this happen? How did that happen? Why do they feel the way they do? It just seemed like as I continued on my journey, listening and learning, as we said, Eckhart Tolle, and there are other people that don't come to mind, Ruiz. There are so many people out there who've been blessed with a higher form of consciousness. And until you tap into the higher form of consciousness, and all of us have different paths to that. And that's why I can't tell you how you should do it, because your path is uniquely your own. It belongs to you. You know, you and I can sit here and talk about it, and you say, well, that's a good point. And you can incorporate it. But still, that's your path. And that's where I think the Dalai Lama and people like that, Bishop Tutu, Mandela, it's just awesome. And, you know, Gandhi, I read several things about Gandhi, because at Morehouse, there were several instructors who had gone to India. And matter of fact, they taught Dr. King about Gandhi. And Dr. King picked up on the philosophy of Gandhi.
Well, those are pretty special people, though.
Yeah, but that's why they were put here. That's why they were put here. Whether it's Jesus or Muhammad, that's why. It may be one out of a million, but that's why they were put here. It's up to us to listen to them. It's up to us. And if we choose not to listen, because what are human beings given? And that is the ability to make their own decisions.
Okay, but let me play the devil's advocate a little bit, and I'm in total 100% agreement.
Yeah, sure.
But there's other people that people listen to. Okay,
we
won't get into the U.S. political scheme, but there's a raft of people who listen to a negative voice who believe they are the Gandhi of the, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so how does it get lost there?
People. And I think historians can really, Rome did the same thing. You know, you went through several Caesars where people listened to the wrong Caesar, whether it's Mussolini, whether it's Hitler. Every country has had their despot. And now America is only just over 400 years old. And so we're getting our time now because we thought we were the gift after World War II.
Didn't everyone, though? Every culture did, right?
Well, after World War II, you know, as we were talking about, we helped the Japanese. We helped the Germans to rebuild after we thought we were it. And we lived on that premise. Now that premise is being removed. Somebody comes along with the Bible held upside down. Somebody else comes along and says, what constitution are you talking about? You know, what kind of... I don't
know. Our favorite
song. Because what it is. But wow. Yeah. Wow.
Okay. So I think, gentlemen, this is a good place for us to stop for this week.
It was a great conversation.
It was fabulous. Loved it, loved it, loved it. I think Jay is amazing to listen to. He's so knowledgeable. But there's a lot of questions. No, not a lot, but a few things I think we should ask each other so that our listeners clarified.
It seems, you know, I must admit, I mean, it's great conversation, and I believe in 100% that he's saying and the dialogue they're having, but it's a little woo-woo to me. Like, I really can't believe here I'm talking about, sitting here talking about spirituality and love yourself and God is love and all that. It's just sort of not my thing.
Okay.
I get it.
A little woo-woo. I love that.
We do talk about how you look at yourself as self-awareness, right? Okay, you got to know who I am, but... Am I seeing my focus on the negative things in life, or am I focused on the positive things in life?
Okay. So this is just another avenue to get you there, to find that strength in yourself. Right?
100%.
Okay. Whether you think it's woo-woo-y or not. Right. It's just a matter of finding out who you are, who your core is, and believing in that. But I have a question for you.
Okay. Not a hard one. Don't make it a hard one.
No, I won't. I know. I don't want to stump you. No, really. I'm very serious with this. So looking at you, hearing what you've done over your lifetime, where did you get that inherent sense?
Well, you know what? There's no doubt it has everything to do with my atypicalness.
Okay.
And what people would call my sort of a negative trait would be stubbornness.
Ah, yes.
You know, mm-hmm. And my stubbornness... I mean, I fought back. I felt comfortable fighting back. And although I knew I'm making all sorts of mistakes, I had this feeling that I still could do it. I would not conform to their way of doing because I knew it wouldn't work for me. And it's hard at first because you get more voices saying it's wrong than you do good. But then all of a sudden you have a success.
Right.
And you think, wow, maybe this is working. Maybe those negative forces are wrong. And then you have another success. Then you start to build your tribe, and your tribe are going, no, Rick, that's the right way to do it. And all of a sudden, where it may have been, you know, 50-50, you know, positive and negative kind of reinforcement happened. All of a sudden, and now it's 60% of believing that I'm doing the right thing. And the stronger and the more success I have, the more my tribe is supporting me, more the way my teams function. All of a sudden, I'm up to 70, maybe 80%. There's always going to be that other side.
Of course.
Because you're always screwing up. You're always making mistakes. Yeah. I'm always kind of weird a little bit.
That's going to make you doubt yourself somewhat.
Somewhat. Right. But my tribe, that stubbornness. And that's what I always talk about is that it's all those mistakes where you learn.
Mm-hmm.
And you learn that. Your way, and let me say, when I say your way, I mean everybody will do it somewhat different.
Right.
Is the right way for you. Doesn't mean you're not learning. Doesn't mean you're not adjusting. Doesn't mean you're not conforming somewhat.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you can't be the total rebel outside the lines all the time.
No.
So you're doing all those sorts of things, but you're still holding on to what your superpowers are and loving yourself. And that's funny you say that, loving yourself. I would never put it that way, but I get it. Having confidence in yourself, being knowing that you can accomplish things, having pride in the way you do things, loving your team are all the things, I think, that drive a successful, well, leader, and in right. this case, an atypical leader.
Right. But yes, and 100%, I agree, 100%. It still amazes me, though, that with your atypicalness, that you were strong enough, and I guess it's your stubbornness inside you, because I know how stubborn you are, so I can imagine what it was like, that you could just believe in yourself that much. Like, you just believe so much that you were going to do it.
Don't get carried away with that. That is, I believe in myself, but it was the Dannys, the Johns, the Paulas, so, what other people in my life that were saying, yeah, Rick, no, right on, keep going. We believe in you. We love you. We support you. We were kind to each other.
Right.
We supported each other. We had faith. Each one of us fed on the other. And it was that. It was because of the relationships that we had built that allowed them to support the way that they did.
Right. And it goes back to having that kindness.
I think there's no doubt we had great relationships.
Yeah.
To this day, we do.
I know. I saw it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's wonderful. Okay. I'm going to ponder on this for a while.
Well, we're going to get to talk to Jay again next week. We're going to do the second part of the episode.
Yeah.
And it's interesting where we go. We're going to have another guest. Judy has a bunch of really interesting questions for Jay that we'll listen to. So it should be fun.
Yeah. Good. I look forward to it. So we'll be here next week then?
Yeah. We'll do the second part.
Okay. Perfect.
Okay. Ciao.
Ciao.
Thanks for joining us today and listening to another episode of The Atypical Leader. If you haven't already done so, like, share, and follow me on Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, and wherever you find your favorite podcasts. By liking and sharing, you will help other atypicals find all of us, so we can all start to leverage the stories, strategies, and strengths of what make us all unique. Keep listening and remember, take charge and push away those self-doubts. Leverage what we're talking about. Be confident in who you are, and proud of what makes you unique.
So join me, Rick Brennan, and my co-host Judy Sims on the next episode of The Atypical Leader. And don't forget to get your copy of the book, The Atypical Leader, Harnessing the Power of Neurodiversity, on Amazon. To learn more about us, leadership, and neurodiversity, please go to our website, atypicalleader.com.
Thanks for listening. Let's do it again next week.